Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 7, Killing of the Demon Trinavartha, Text Number 5. Nandasya Patni Krita Manjanadikam Vipray Krita Swastyayanam Supujitai Anadya Vasa Shrug Abhishta Denubi Sanjata Nadrak Raksham Ashishas Chanai Nandasya of Nanda Maharaj. Or of Maharaj Nanda. Patni, the wife. Mother Jashoda. Krita Manjana Adikam. After she and the other members of the house had bathed, and the child had been bathed also. Vipray. By the Brahmanas, Krita Swastyayanam, engaging them in chanting auspicious Vedic hymns, Supujitai, were all received and worshipped with proper respect. Ana Adya, by offering them sufficient grains and other edibles. And very desirable cows. Oh, I'm sorry, we skipped there. Vasa, garments. Shrag abhishta denubi. By offering flower garlands and very desirable cows. So when you offer flower garlands, you should also bring along some desirable cows too. Yes. Don't give flower garments without cows. Especially nice cows. Sanjata Nidra had become sleepy. Aksham, whose eyes, Ashi Shayat, laid the child down. Shanai, for the time being. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After completing the bathing ceremony for the child, Mother Jashoda received the Brahmanas by worshipping them with proper respect and giving them ample food grains and other edibles, clothing, desirable cows and garlands. The Brahmins properly chanted Vedic hymns who observed the auspicious ceremony, and when they finished, Mother Jashoda saw that the child felt sleepy. She lay down in the bed with the child until he was peacefully asleep. Purport. An affectionate mother takes great care of her child, is always anxious to see that the child is not disturbed even for a moment. As long as the child wants to remain with the mother stays with the child. The child feels very comfortable. Mother Jashoda saw that her child felt sleepy, and to give him all facilities for sleep, she lay down with the child. And when he was peaceful, she got up to attend her other household duties. Please note that she didn't fall asleep with the child. Otherwise, Mother Jashoda, child Krishna is sleeping 20 hours a day, and so is Mother Jashoda. No, yes. Child Krishna may be asleep, Mother Jashoda is awake. So text 6, any comments about the sleeping Mother Jashoda? The liberal Mother Jashoda, absorbed in celebrating the Uttana ceremony, was visiting, receiving guests, worshipping them with respect, and offering them clothing, cows, garlands, and grains. Thus she could not hear the child crying for his mother. At that time, the child Krishna demanding to drink the milk of his mother's breast, angrily threw his legs upward. Purport. Krishna had been placed underneath a household cart, hand cart. But this hand cart was actually another form of the Shakatasura, a demon who had come there to kill the child. Now on the plea of demanding to suck his mother's breast, Krishna took this opportunity to kill the demon. Thus he kicked Shakatasura just to expose him. Although Krishna's mother was engaged in receiving guests, Lord Krishna wanted to draw her attention by killing the Shakatasura, and therefore he kicked that cart-shaped demon. Such are the pastimes of Krishna. Krishna wanted to draw the attention of his mother. While he was doing so, he created a great havoc, unstandable by ordinary persons. These narrations are wonderfully enjoyable, and those who are fortunate are struck with wonder on hearing these extraordinary activities of the Lord. Although the less intelligent regard them as mythological because of a dull brain cannot understand them, they're real facts. These narrations are actually so enjoyable and enlightening that Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami took pleasure in them. And other liberated persons, following their footsteps, become fully jubilant in hearing about the wonderful activities of the Lord. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Chaito Darpanam Arjunam Baba Mahagna Vagni Nirvapanam Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam Vidyavadu Jivanam Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, that the chanting of the holy names is an ocean of Ananda Buddhi Vardhanam, an ocean of bliss. That's because Krishna is an ocean of bliss, unlimited happiness, unlimited bliss. And wherever Krishna is, then it's blissful. Now there are two factors. Krishna is there, wherever Krishna is. It should be blissful, and how receptive we are to Krishna's being there. If we're a blissful being there, then we can experience Krishna's bliss. If we're not really, we don't care whether Krishna is there or not, then obviously our receptivity to Krishna will be rather limited. So our Krishna consciousness movement is to spread the holy name and make the atmosphere receptive to people, for us to receive the holy name. That means that the attitude of service is there to Krishna, and we're trying to develop that attitude of service. Service doesn't mean just to do things. It means to do something to please the beloved. That's called receptive. That any other mentality will not help us become receptive to Krishna. And thus we're wanting to please Krishna. And what pleases Krishna? Mostly is our wanting to please him. Now, here in the material world, when we want to do something, it's rather dull. We don't necessarily experience very much of anything. I mean, in terms of just... Of course, if we want something, we may experience lust. I want to enjoy this object. Or anger. I want to destroy this anger. Or greed. I want to get more of this. So we do have emotions in the material world, but they're not our original emotions. They're the experiencing the material energies. What kind of material emotions are there in the material energy? And therefore our original desire to love is perverted into enjoying the different varieties of material emotions as a reciprocation for our desire to enjoy the material energy. But when we desire to please Krishna, when we want to please Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates. And our original feelings, spiritual feelings, are invoked because they can't be invoked outside of becoming conscious of Krishna. Just like the sun is there, but without being in the sunlight, one can't experience what the sun is like. Similarly, without being in Krishna consciousness, we can't experience Krishna, and without experiencing Krishna, we can't experience our own selves. Because we're of the same nature as Krishna, and if Krishna is not there, then how can we actually experience our own nature? Because what are we going to do? How are we going to experience it? We experience it in relationship to the material energy. But the material energy has a very limited experience. Therefore, priti kam, what is that? There's this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that lust means to satisfy one's own senses, and prema means to satisfy Krishna's senses. The residents of Vrindavan, they have only one objective, because they don't have a material body. Therefore, there's no question of satisfying the material senses, because they don't have any material senses. They only have spiritual senses. In other words, spiritual senses are senses which are not covered by material senses, that's all. Just like I've given the example before, if you want to eat a big feast, then it's not a good idea to put a glove on your tongue before the feast, because then the experience is going to be rather limited. But if one puts a glove on the tongue, then one may question the value of the food, criticize the cook, probably didn't add enough salt, seems to be tasteless. But it's not tasteless, nor have you lost the sense of taste, but you're just tasting the glove, that's all. So simply the material world means to be tasting the material energy, which is tasteless, really. But we imagine it. There is some kind of taste. There is some kind of rasa, but it's a very limited rasa. As Prahlad Maharaj said, yen mai tu nadi griyamedi sukham hi tu cham kandunyanena iva dukkariya dukkha dukkham. It's like the rubbing of two hands together to relieve an itching sensation. If anyone has ever gotten an itching sensation, which I think most of us have, when you scratch it, you feel some kind of happiness. Isn't that right? But if one thinks that that's the only happiness that's possible, the scratching, the itch, then one is going to have a very limited experience. Because in the material world, there is flavor, etc., when we eat, especially when we eat, but that it's only temporary. And therefore, no matter how much we eat, we're never completely satisfied because we want more. How many times have devotees come back for a second ice cream cone, Lita Govinda? Anyone ever comes back for a second ice cream cone? Or a third? More than three? No. So there's a limit. We have testimony. But we're never satisfied with a limited amount of sense enjoyment or any other enjoyment we can get in the material world. Therefore, we always hanker for more. But in the spiritual world, the more one hankers for happiness for Krishna, in relation to Krishna, the more one enjoys. So that hankering and the hankering in the material world are two different things. The hankering in the spiritual world creates even more happiness. And hankering in the material world creates more distress at every level. First of all, the hankering itself is distressful. Second of all, if you get what you want, after a while you can't enjoy something unlimitedly in the material world. After a while you get bored or tired of it. And number three, even if you're enjoying it, to a large extent, you're going to lose it. And even if you don't lose it, you're going to be fearful of losing it. The more you enjoy something, the more you're attached to something, the more you're fearful of losing it. And the more you're fearful of losing it, then the more you suffer. Not from losing it, but the suffering from the fear of losing it is even greater than the actual losing it. Just like this body. Whenever we think that we have to leave this body sometime, then we mentally we suffer. Oh, But when we leave, after we leave the body, no one is attached to the body anymore. Well, I mean, unless you come back as a ghost. But hopefully we don't come back as ghosts. So anyhow, the material world is an ocean of suffering in all different levels. And it's an ocean where everyone's trying to become happy, and the more people make arrangements for happiness, then the more they have to suffer. Just like if you don't have something, you can't suffer from losing it. If you don't have a car, you don't have to worry about whether it gets something getting stolen, or having to pay for it and maintain it, putting gas into it, or losing it, someone stealing it. You don't have to worry about it because you don't have it. And as soon as you have one, then there's so much anxiety over it. Of course, it's useful, but if you use it in Krishna service, then it has some value, because you can use it in Krishna service. It helps you do some service to Krishna. And therefore, it's not just a material car. It's spiritualized because it's in relation to Krishna. But if not, then all that can be done is driven someplace to satisfy our hankering and lamentation, because that's all that we do in the material world, is hanker and lament. So we have some cars or airplanes or something, because it helps satisfy our hankering and lamentation. But even if we hanker and lamenting, it's not very enjoyable. And something that expands our ability to hanker and lament is not really expanding our happiness at all. So to imagine that in modern society people are happier than they were before is an illusion. Of course, we have to consider that supposedly in modern society people learn to wash, there is greater sanitation, etc. So they've learned to a certain extent, compared to some other times in the world, how to stay a little bit more in the mode of goodness and avoid the suffering in the mode of ignorance or passion, which is even more suffering. So some element of goodness may be there, sanitation to a certain extent. But after all, hankering when you're a caveman for a dinosaur egg, or hankering when you're a modern civilized person hanking for an omelet at the nearest restaurant, is really not that much different. Matter of fact, maybe the cavemen were raw food fanatics. Therefore, some people may consider they had a healthy diet because they ate only raw food. Or maybe they cooked. But obviously they didn't cook. You know, the water hopefully was cleaner back then. They didn't have to pay for the electricity. I'm sure they didn't have, you know. Anyhow, there's not much difference between the past, present, and the future. In the past, people were eating, they were sleeping, they were mating and defending. And people are, today, what are they doing, essentially? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And I can predict, 5 million years ago, exactly what everyone's going to be doing. Guess what they're going to be doing? What's that? Yes. So there is no real past, present, and future. Everything is the same, even in the material world, it's the same eternally. Just slightly different dresses, that's all. Slightly different food that people eat, slightly different things that they lie down to sleep. Sex life is more or less the same, although it has become more perverted nowadays. And maybe the instruments that they use for defending may be a little different. Previously, they used to drop a rock on your head. And nowadays, they drop a grenade. But after all, you wind up in the same place, namely dead. It's not that I died from an atomic bomb, therefore I get a better destination because I died in a scientific way, rather than this crude way of having a rock dropped on my head. No, the same principle is there. Whatever we remember at the time of death, that's where we're going. It doesn't matter whether it's a rock or an atomic bomb, we go to the same place. Now that you go before Yamaraj and Yamaraj asks you, how did you die? And you say, well, I died by an atomic bomb. He says, all right, no worries. We forgive you. No, the same judgment is there however you go to Yamaraj. Or you, if you go to the heavenly planets or anywhere else. It does depend upon how you were killed. It depends upon our consciousness at the time of death. So what is the progress? There is no progress, actually. The only progress is possible in Krishna consciousness. But Natevidu Swarthagatimi Vishnu, people don't know that. They don't know the value of hearing about Krishna, of associating with Krishna. They think something else is a substitute for Krishna. But there is no substitute. There's no other ocean of unlimited ocean of bliss other than Krishna. So anything other than putting our minds upon Krishna will not be very helpful for our ultimate benefit. It may serve our temporary benefit, but not our ultimate purpose of life. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thanks for the lecture. So the question is, how can we get less distracted or keep our mind on Krishna and service and devotees while we are like working in the regular jobs or just being outside the temple?
Well, the same formula is there. For anyone, whatever we're doing, hear about Krishna so we get a vision. Oh, everything belongs to Krishna. So it's not that we're in one part of the material world and Krishna is not there or it doesn't belong to him. Everywhere belongs to Krishna. The second is that we should understand what Krishna wants us to do through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and ultimately confirmed by the super soul within the heart. And it makes it clear that this is what Krishna wants me to do. And the third is we should do it for Krishna, to please him. And what pleases Krishna will depend upon what our particular service is, etc. So for a householder, the householder, as everyone else, should sit down morning and evening and hear about Krishna and worship the deity and offer prasadam to the deity. And then for a householder, then they have dana, damas, and yagyas. They're supposed to engage themselves in Krishna's service, do sacrifice for Krishna, and give in charity. So if one is earning money, then one should give some proportion of that money. Of course, the money should be utilized in one's house, and a Krishna-conscious householder, but some proportion should also be given to spread Krishna consciousness to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then one will, if one is engaged, and it will be much more easy, if we know that I'm doing this work or whatever I'm doing, but I'm doing it ultimately, Krishna is going to get the result, then it's much easier to think about him. But if we don't accept that Krishna is God, and that everything belongs to him, and whatever I'm doing is meant for his pleasure, then it's very difficult to think about Krishna with any kind of devotion. Therefore, it has to be practical. Yes?
Thanks.
Anything else? Okay. Kurandara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.